This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us a Dr. Joe Barton, and first he's a dentist, and he's a doctor of divinity and doctor of theology, and of course he wrote a book called The Evolution of a Creationist. And as I read that book, I could see myself, you know, trained in the medical sciences, trained in all the sciences, indoctrinated in the beliefs in evolution. And then, of course, once you become a Christian, why, you say, well, of course, I can believe in God, and I can believe in Jesus Christ, but, you know, of course, evolution has to be true, and so that we have this idea of theistic evolution. And then, of course, as time goes by, you finally have to make that painful decision. Either the Bible is true or science is true. But, of course, science is based upon observation and something that you reproduce. And how can you reproduce something that happened, you know, billions and billions and billions of years ago? And this is really what nobody ever wants to ask. How can the scientists be sure of any of the things they say? And the truth of the matter is, they really aren't, are they, Dr. Martin?
Well, that's for sure.
Well, of course, I can sympathize with you, because I know just how you felt. You know, how do you correlate what we learned in school and what we read in the Bible? And, of course, either one is true and the other is false, or the first is false and the other is true. And, of course, the problem is that they have done such a good job on the minds of our children. My fear is that we don't get an education in college. We get an indoctrination, and they're using the educational system to destroy the faith of the American people in the God of the Bible, from whom our freedom comes.
Well, I agree. And I think, really, along those lines, they've kind of changed the definition of science. Science, if we're talking operative science, that's the kind of science you were defining, where, hey, it's observation, experimentation, it's reproducible. I can do an experiment on something, and you can do the same experiment, it'll come out the same way. And that's science. Whereas if we're talking macroevolution, Big Bang, to molecules, to life, to man, over billions of years, or millions of years, or hundreds of thousands of years, that's really a speculative philosophy. It's methodological materialism, basically. So it's a philosophical system. So when they call it science, that's really a misnomer, because it isn't science. Yes, it's philosophy.
It really is. And, of course, they hide behind this thing of science. I remember when I went to college, the Piltdown man was the missing link. Science had proven it. Of course, science had proven the Peking man was the missing link, and the Java man was the missing link, and later we had Lucy, and none of them, of course, were true. This was all part of this incredible scam they put over on generation after generation of gullible people who never, as said, how do you know? Where is the proof? And there is no proof. They simply say it over and over again. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest right here at Radio Liberty. Well, my special guest this afternoon is Dr. Joe Martin, and he, of course, has a degree in dentistry and a degree in divinity, and of course, he has written a wonderful book about evolution of a creationist and how he was able to unlearn everything he had learned in college and come to see the truth of what the Bible says. So you pick up the story from there, Dr. Martin.
Well, when I graduated from dental college, I was actually agnostic. I wasn't sure there was a God. I was not atheist, but I just didn't know. And then I was looking into Zen Buddhism, which I was kind of like an early New Ager. This is in the 60s. And I was an evolutionist through and through, because that had been my whole college education. And it wasn't until I prayed a prayer to the God of the Bible. And I wasn't even sure he was there, but I figured if he could part the Red Sea and if he can raise the dead, he could hear me. So I was sitting in the officers' club at Wichita Falls Shepherd Air Force Base, ready to go into the Air Force during the Vietnam War, 1966. And I just said, okay, God, if you're up there, you have two choices. You can either show me the girl I'm going to marry, or you're going to see the wildest Air Force officer you've ever seen. And I thought, nobody heard that, so I thought, I'm going out and live it up. But that's the day I met my wife. The next day, I told her I was going to marry her. And I'm still married 36 years later. And I decided the God of the Bible, maybe he really does exist. So I went to the first church I got to when I got to Washington, D.C. I was the dentist for the 89th Military Airlift Wing. That was when President Johnson was president. And the pastor there just asked me to read the Bible with him. And we read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And I'd never read the Bible. My mother had had me in church, but I never really read the Bible. And by the way, the average Christian has never read the Bible all the way through. But anyway, I read some Bible and all those Gospels, and it was John 3:16 that God used in my life. For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. And that was the verse God used to bring me into the family. I confessed my sinfulness to him and asked him to save my soul, and I became a Christian. Well, then I immediately became a theistic evolutionist. Now I had my Christianity and evolution, because I didn't even know that there was any kind of a discussion along those lines. In all my years of going to church as a young person, I never heard a pastor even discuss the idea of a young earth creation. And so it wasn't until actually 1971, when I gave my first lecture at Baylor College of Dentistry in Dallas, that I gave it on the evolution of the tooth. And I talked about how these fish scales gradually migrated into the mouth and became teeth over thousands of years.
Hey boy, that takes a lot of faith to believe that.
Well, I mean, I can't believe I believe that, but I did. So my students challenged me. They came up after class and challenged me. Dr. Martin, have you ever investigated the claims of creation science? And I didn't know there was such a thing. So I thought, well, these guys don't know what they're talking about. So I was a cocky young professor. I'll blow those guys out of the water. But 5 years later, I emerged a literal young earth.
We'll be right back here in just a moment. All right, well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Job Martin, and we're talking about, of course, his experience trying to go from being a theistic evolutionist to a creationist, in other words, believing that God did exactly what he said in the Bible. So pick up the story from there. You were teaching there at Baylor University. Some of your students challenged the idea that the fish scales had migrated into the mouth and become teeth. And, of course, they've got all these foolish things they teach in universities without any scientific basis in them. I can remember those pictures that we had, you know, in our books on evolution, you know, and it shows the similarity between the embryos of the pig and the human and the fish and, you know, and all and the monkey. And, of course, those pictures were discredited 100 years ago at the college where they were drawn, and the fellow who drew them was humiliated. It's shown to be a fraud, and yet they still use those year after year after year in textbooks all across America, knowing full well that they're fraudulent, but boy, are they convincing.
Well, that's true. That man was Ernst Haeckel, and yes, he was disciplined by the academic community of his own day for those drawings of embryos that look so similar. And then, if anyone wants to look it up, I think it was Science Magazine, September of 1997, and also The New Scientist of September 1997, had articles, and they basically titled the articles Embryonic Fraud Lives On, and they finally had to publish the fact that those drawings are fraudulent, even though they're still in our textbooks. We were on several university campuses over the last year, and I asked them to show me their biology books, and even at the graduate levels, those fake drawings are still in there.
But of course, they're trying to control the minds of our children. And this isn't happening accidentally. There really are people who are intentionally lying to the young people.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, if something's in a 2002 copyrighted textbook when it was exposed in 1997 publicly in the evolutionary magazines as a fraud, and it, in 1884 it was proven to be a fraud when the things first came out, well, yes, there's got to be some kind of an agenda there. I would certainly agree with you on that.
Well, of course, you've done a good job in your book of just pointing out some of the things that the evolutionists can't explain, some of the animals that, and beetles and birds, and the way they do things, and they're the only birds or beetles that do things like, I mean, they're unique. There's nothing like them. Where did they evolve from? I mean, how did the only way that they could do the things that they do and know how to do it and do this involuntarily, is that somebody created them that way.
Well, that's for sure. They showed complete design. They need all their parts or they're dead. If they're, as someone coined the term, they're irreducibly complex. I think that was Michael Behe. But anyway, yes, and then I've been asking people, okay, have you ever studied, like, for instance, the Pacific golden plover in a college classroom or in a high school classroom? And I never get any hands. We just did a family week thing up in Colorado, and all these families are there from all over the United States. None of them had ever heard of a golden plover. It's not in the books. Well, why? Well, because the evolutionists can't describe this little bird in evolutionary terms because it flies from Hawaii to Alaska and then from Alaska back to Hawaii over total water, and it doesn't even swim. It's an 88-hour flight. It's a bird about the size of a pigeon. And it's impossible, because evolution would say a migratory animal goes a little further north one summer, a little further south the next one, a little further north the next one, until it finally gets up to the Arctic and South America, whatever. Well, this little bird had to make the whole trip the first time and every time, or it goes extinct in one generation. So nobody ever hears about these kind of things, these wonderful things that our God has made that we can study and give him the glory and give him thanks. And we never hear about them.
Now, why don't you tell the story of the bombardier beetle? Because that is such a unique little critter there, and most people have never heard of him, and especially how he works physiologically.
Well, I'll tell you what. That little bug, if evolution is true, it doesn't have a defense mechanism. So let's say it's evolving and doesn't have a defense mechanism, so it finally evolves these little chemical factories inside itself that when it mixes the chemicals, they have such a violent reaction, it's similar to an explosion. Well, the first time it mixes up those chemicals, it just blew itself up, and splattered bug pieces don't evolve. But it doesn't blow up. Well, why? Because it mixes these chemicals in such a way that they won't explode or have that violent reaction. Well, now you don't have a defense mechanism again. So the spiders eat it, it's gone. But we still have it. Well, why? Because it has another little factory inside itself that manufactures exactly, precisely the right chemical catalyst so that when it squirts that chemical in with these chemicals that are like in neutral, you get your violent reaction, but it just blew itself up again, unless it has like an asbestos-lined firing chamber. Well, even if it had that, it blew itself up if it didn't have somewhere for the explosion to go. Well, it does. It has like twin tail tubes, and it can aim those tail tubes out the front, out the side. It's like a gun turret. And it never shoots its mother, and I've seen pictures of an ant that crawls right over. It only shoots its enemies. Well, how does a half-inch bug know who its enemies are, you know? So there's a nervous system involved there that's totally complex. So even a little bug like a bombardier beetle, if it had to have a God to create it just like it is, with all of its parts there, all of them functional, and if there is even one little creature that needed a God, why not a God for everything?
Well, of course, there are two chambers in this little critter, this little beetle, and then, of course, they mix these two chemicals together, and, of course, it produces a solution that's 212 degrees.
Exactly right.
And, it's just literally steaming hot when it's actually squirted out at its enemies. Now, I mean, who among us can produce something that's 212 degrees automatically, and yet the little beetle does? And then, of course, it's insulated so it doesn't kill itself. And, of course, they can aim in any direction it wants to. complex. I mean, the complexity even of a little beetle like that is amazing. And then, of course, you look at the human being and the genome and all of these things, and you see this perfect order, whether you see it in the human genome or whether you see it in arithmetic or whether you see it certainly in astronomy or whether you see it in biology or chemistry or physics or in, even in music. Everything is in perfect order. Are we supposed to believe that that just sort of happened by itself? Or is it all according to a master design? And I think it's a lot easier to believe in a master design than to think that everything just happened by accident.
Oh, boy, I do, too. And as a matter of fact, the more you study everything, the more you see the genius behind it. I like to, on the college campuses, I'll put up a little syllogism, and I'll say, okay, DNA is the language of the cell. Everybody agrees? DNA, you know, tells your fingernails, go on top, tells your nose, go down, holds down, and on a rainy day, if they're up, you're in trouble. And I'll say, okay, DNA is language. Language requires intelligence. Oh, yeah, everybody agrees you don't have language without intelligence. Therefore, DNA had an intelligent cause, silence in the classroom. And so, yes, there's genius behind everything that we see, even behind what we are, even behind like crabs, or I mean lobsters and crawfish and shrimp. When they shed their exoskeleton, they also shed part of their ear canal, and so they have to pick up little bits of sand, and when they get their new shell, or right after they shed their old one, they pick up little bits of sand and debris and stick it in their ears. And that's what helps them know which way is down. Things, gravity pulls on that thing. They did some experiments where they put them in a tank with no sand, and they shed their exoskeleton, and then they put little metal filings, and they would pick the little metal filings up and stick them in their ears. And then you could hold a magnet over the top of the tank, and they'll swim upside down because they think gravity is up. So our Lord has built things. Well, we have the same little things in our ears, like little teeny pebbles in there, and that's what tells us, hey, gravity, which way is up, which way is down? Well, those things can't evolve. You have to have those things right from the very beginning, or you can't even stand up. So I think every way we look, every direction you look, the evidence of a creator who is a genius, who loves us, who loves art, who loves pretty things. What an amazing God we have.
Well, I think, you know, the problem the evolutionist has is, you ask him where life began, and he really can't tell you, so he'll tell you maybe it came from outer space. And then
right.
They say, well, yeah, but where did it come from in outer space?
Yeah.
It had to begin someplace. Well, we don't know where it came from, but we know God didn't create it because it came from outer space.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, you know, they're in really so much trouble. But it's really a matter of faith, and it's really how you look at God determines how you look at evolution. Wouldn't that be a fair statement?
Oh, my, that is for sure. Well, for instance, Richard Dawkins up there, or no, it's Lewontin up there at Harvard, or Lewontin, how he pronounces his name. I think it was January or February 1997 in the New York Review of Books. He said, basically, I'm a materialist. There's no evidence for it, meaning I'm an evolutionist. But we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. The whole issue is God. They're going to believe by faith in their eternal matter rather than believe by faith in eternal God. It's a choice.
Well, of course, one of the things you bring out in your book is this idea of the Big Bang theory. But, you know, and that's where, of course, everything came from, with the Big Bang. But there had to be matter there beforehand. Where did the matter come from in the perfect order?
Exactly right. They don't have an explanation for that. It's just always been. They have faith in eternal matter.
What sort of response do you get from the young people when you talk to them at the colleges today?
Well, we get three responses. One response is they shout and yell at me, call me a stupid old man, and then a second response is, well, you know, maybe this would be worth looking into. And then we have Christian kids that are losing it. And they'll come up, boy, I'm so glad you came on the campus. I was just losing it. I was losing my faith. And you've reinforced it. I'm back on track. And thanks for coming.
So all right. We'll be back here in just a minute with Dr. Job Martin. Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish
concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen and what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America, our values, our future, our under attack today.
This is Radio Health journalist Bill Sardi. Hey, a lot of smart supplement users like to check out the facts before they purchase an herbal product. So go to www.lifespannnutrition.com and read all about Alamax, the new odorless, 100% pure allicin garlic extract imported from Great Britain. You'll find Alamax is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. Check it out at www.lifespannnutrition.com or call 866-405-4000 to learn more about this breakthrough in garlic technology called Alamax. Call 1-866-405-4000 today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to tell you a little bit about the Big Berkey water filters. The Big Berkey has been around for 150 years. The design has been used by missionaries throughout the world to filter pond water and lake water and river water when there is a question of its potability. Now, the Big Berkey is available here. It's made out of stainless steel, and of course, the filters will take out bacteria and Charybdis spiridium and E. coli and so many of the bacteria that can be harmful to you, that'll take out much of the chemicals and much of the pesticides, much of the impurities in the water. And the Big Berkey, of course, is ordinarily $279. It filters 25 gallons of water a day, and you can use it in your home and your RV. You can use it in your camper. But, of course, you have a ready access to water if something should happen, and you know that it's going to be potable water. Now, the Big Berkey, ordinarily $279, $239 from Radio Liberty. And if you buy it from us, why, you'll get a four-tape set or a video that we produced. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the Big Berkey. But this is not available, of course, either in California or in Iowa. However, if you would like to get a filter, why, we have the Berkey Light. And the Berkey Light, instead of being made of stainless steel, is actually made of a clear substance. It's a polymer of some sort. It's actually what they make bulletproof glass out of. The filters are really more efficient than the Big Berkey filters, but they have to be replaced every couple of years. They call the Black Berkey filters, and they call them the purifiers. Now, if you have either the Berkey Light or the Big Berkey and you want to get rid of fluoride, and specifically there are specific post filters for both the Black Berkey filters and the ceramic filters, the Berkey Light is $199, and of course you get the free four tape set or video. Go to our website at radioliberty.com and you can see both of the filters. That's radioliberty.com. And then give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest right now is, of course, Dr. Job Martin, and we're talking about the evolution of a creationist. And Dr. Martin, how can people get copies of your book?
Well, they can give us a call. You want my number?
You go ahead and put it out there.
It's 972-771-0568.
All right, give that one more time.
972-771-0568.
All right, let's go to Jeff, who's calling us from Missouri. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Hi. I have a question for your guest, and this regards creation, but not evolution.
All right.
I have a question about the firmament, which was made on day two. And my understanding of the firmament is that it is all space from the ground out forever, so to speak. It includes both our atmosphere and then the vacuum where the outside of our atmosphere. Is that a correct understanding of the firmament?
Well, I think that that word firmament is used in several different ways. Maybe a clarification of how God's using it in Genesis chapter 1 would be in Genesis chapter 1, verse 20.
Mm-hmm.
When you jump over there, it says, "And God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and the fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven." So it might be described as our atmospheric heaven where the birds fly around.
Mm-hmm.
It's used as the expanse where the stars are,
And
so it can use either. So then you'd have to decide in the context, what do you think we're talking about in this particular verse, in this particular passage?
Okay, but my point is, well, on day two, which I don't have the scripture right in front of me, but it'd be in one of the opening verses of Genesis when the firmament was created, it would include all of that. Psalm 19 says that the heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament showeth his handiwork. And the firmament in Psalm 19 is, in the firmament hath he set a tabernacle for the sun. So in Psalm 19, the firmament of the open space is what's being referred to in Psalm 19.
Okay, well, that's what I said. It refers to either.
Okay.
Okay, fine.
But the firmament,
what was your point?
My point is, if the firmament was created, it is a vacuum.
No, it doesn't have to be a vacuum because the birds don't fly in a vacuum. But
the sun sits in the tabernacle, which is the firmament, and that is the expanse of heaven, which is a vacuum.
All right, what is your point?
Well, my point is that in Psalm 19 and also Romans chapter 1, the one thing that all men know that the glory of God exists and they behold it is by the nothingness which the Almighty created. In Psalm 19, it says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, the firmament showeth his handiwork." In Romans chapter 1, it says, "The invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen."
Okay,
his
fine.
Eternal power and Godhead. Did he create nothing? Did nothing?
All right, fine. The question is, I'm not even sure where he's going with this. Are you?
Not exactly.
All right, fine. Well, I think that we're not creating nothing. Certainly, in space, there is no atmosphere, but it's not nothing at all. So,
well, it was nothing before he created it.
That's for sure.
Yes.
Okay, fine. So anyway, of course, our guest today is Dr. Job Martin, and we're talking about the evolution of a creationist, and of course, all of these things that are out there, people sort of want to argue about all sorts of incidental and non-important things. Now, if God is all-powerful, can he create something so big that he can't move it? And these, of course, are all sophistic types of argument that only supposedly are to create confusion in the part of people thinking about it. The question is there a God? Is there a perfect order in everything that surrounds us? And, of course, if there is an order in it, how did it happen if there is no God? And that, I think, is the thing that the people who are pushing evolution totally ignore. They have to convince people that evolution took place, because that, of course, is the only way that they're going to be able to destroy the faith of the successive generations. And I really think that's really behind the whole evolutionary movement, and the reason that it's being taught in school so fervently is to destroy the faith of the children, especially the Christian children, whose parents are foolish enough to send them into the government schools.
I agree. And, you know, you think of the world view, and as far as the humanist world view, you don't have it without evolution. The Marxist world view, you don't have it without evolution. The New Age world view, no, it's not there without evolution. Postmodernism, it's not there without evolution. And so these false world views that are on our campuses, they're all based, their foundation is basically evolution.
Well, I think that this is the important thing. And so, you know, we have to know how to counter this. But the most important thing is what's your relationship with God. And I think that I know from my own point of view, you know, I was a dedicated evolutionist until I came to accept the gospel. And once I did, why, then it was simply a matter of finally realizing that the Bible is right. And the scientists were out there trying to confuse us, asking us, did God create nothing, are sadly mistaken.
Well, yes.
We'll be back in just a moment here.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 and the Wolfgang off the Eastern Coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV or order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. And this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book anywhere that will give you the more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I want to tell our listeners about Miracle 2 soap products. And, of course, we can't make any medical claims for them. We will tell you that many of our listeners tell us that they've done miraculous things for them. But there's a soap and a lotion. There is a moisturizing soap and a gel and a neutralizer. And the five products all seem to work very, very well together. I will tell you that we have an awful lot of people who use them and come back, and they wouldn't be without them. Now, if you'd like more information on the Miracle 2 soap products, you can give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we'll be glad to send you some information, or better still, we hope that you'll want to buy an introductory set of these products, and I think if you do, you'll be well pleased. Again, they're called Miracle 2 soap products, and of course, whether they'll help you or do anything miraculous, I don't know, but many people really do claim that they have helped them a great deal. And then I want to tell you about Phenopoly. If you have children or grandchildren who have gone to government schools, and they've been taught to read by the look-see method, they have been deprived of the ability to pronounce words and spell adequately, and the only way they're going to do that is to learn phonetically. Phonopoly is aimed at a program that's a board game played like Monopoly that will teach children how to read phonetically and spell phonetically and pronounce words phonetically. It's five board games and two bonus games, and of course we throw in a couple of books with that. So if you'd like to find out more about Phonopoly, or preferably to get a set, they're $139.95. Most of these programs are $300, $400, $500, or $600. Phonopoly is $139.95. Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And call right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Dr. Job Martin. We're talking about his book, The Evolution of a Creationist, and he's been telling us, he goes on to university campuses and, of course, talks about this. And, of course, the children there are so indoctrinated, they've never been allowed to hear anything on the other side. And when you do suddenly hear something on the other side, you say, that just can't be true, because I'm so smart, and my professor says this, it must be true, I've taken my examinations, and I'm getting good grades. For putting these things down, this must be the truth. And that's the great tragedy. It isn't the truth. They've been actually misled and been lied to. And that's why, you know, our universities are not centers of education. They're centers of indoctrination. Science is a search for the truth, come up with experiments that are reproducible and based upon observation. And there's nothing in evolution that qualifies anyway as far as science. Would you agree with that?
Well, I would agree if we're talking macroevolution. Many times creationists get accused of saying, well, you say that there's no such thing as speciation, but I don't think creationists talk in those terms. God says there were different kinds of animals, kinds of fish, different things. And so, yeah, within kinds, there would be speciation, different species in a kind, which meant Noah didn't have to take Guernseys and Holsteins and Brahma bulls on the ark. He just took some two male and female cow, and maybe seven if they were the clean ones, and then out comes all these things out of the gene pool. But yes, I agree with you.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now give us a few other examples. You have examples of a little bird over there in Australia that has an amazing way of hatching their eggs.
Well, yeah, the Australian incubator birds, they're called mopuds or brush turkeys. There's different species of them. And they use different things in nature to hatch their eggs. And the one I wrote about in the book is the one that they call him the mound builder. And this bird builds these huge nests. They can be anywhere from 50 feet wide to 20 feet high to 6 feet deep in the ground. Just huge nests. And it's like a huge mulch pile. And then they lay their eggs down in there, and I think the species I talked about in the book keeps that nest at 93 degrees Fahrenheit just from the heat of the mulch. And the male bird goes digging down in there every day several times, and he'll check the temperature, and, oh my, a little too hot, he'll come running up out of there and maybe throw sand up on top or try and dig some holes down in to let things cool off a little bit. They have various ways of doing that. And then as far as the female bird goes, she only really does two things. She checks the nest and decides, okay, that nest will be okay. So you think, oh, boy, what if the male bird spent 2 months building a huge nest and the female didn't like it? Well, she comes up and lets him know, I don't like it. So then he builds her another one. But anyway, she'll lay one egg every 3 days for like 7 months. And the eggs are they're almost as big as an ostrich egg. This little bird only weighs about 3.5-4 pounds, and the eggs can weigh about 0.5 pound. And then one species has a shell around the egg that has like ice cream cone shaped holes, the pointy old type of ice cream cone. And when the bird starts getting bigger and it can't breathe very well through those holes, why, it starts peeling off the inside of the shell. And as it peels off the inside of the shell, the holes get bigger, and therefore it can get more air through. And I don't know if people realize it, but all eggs of all birds have holes in them, and that's so the chicks can breathe and get rid of the waste water and things like that. Even a chicken egg, it has about 10,000 holes. And so you think, how can a bird make a hard shell that has holes in it? And if it doesn't have the holes in it, the chicks die. And God did that. I mean, our Lord is behind all of that.
Well, I think everything is in perfect order, and this is the amazing thing, you know, as a surgeon, you know, when you operate on a hand, everybody's hand is just about exactly the same, and so you know where the arteries are going to be and the nerves are going to be. How could that be? And people from Africa and people from South America and people from Europe and people from the United States, they're all the same. And, of course, there's a divine plan for everything, whether it's an anatomy or whether it's simply certainly under the microscope and the ultrasound microscope and evaluating the genetic makeup of things. I mean, the genes and the chromosomes are amazing things, perfect organization. And in fact, that's one of the reasons that why some of the evolution are having real problems today, as they learn more and more about DNA and about the chromosomes. How do they explain this perfect order? And they really can't, so they have to go on to another subject.
Well, that's for sure. And even with all the things going on here now with cloning, well, I was taught when I was majoring in biology back in college that the life is in the DNA. Well, now they take the DNA out of the cell. Well, now the cell should be dead. But if the cell dies before they put some other DNA back into it, well, then it doesn't work. And so now they've got this mystery. Oh, we thought life was in the DNA, that as long as the DNA was in the cell, it made things work. We take the DNA out, the cell is alive without the DNA. And if it dies before we put the new batch of DNA in there, it doesn't work. So that now they have this mystery. Whoa, how is that cell staying alive without its DNA? Well, what does God say? He gives life to everything. And without him, there is no life. And so there's these mysteries that God has, I think even in modern science, they're discovering, boy, we don't have an explanation for that one. Well, we do if we're a Christian. But, hey, God says he gives life. He's the father of life. And so we can explain it.
I think it's a lot easier to accept that God created the heaven and the earth than to try to explain where life came from if you are an evolutionist, and then you've got to have all the right parts of the amino acids together, but you don't know where the amino acids come from. And then you got to have an electric spark, and they've never really produced life, and they've never had life that they produced, in any way reproduce. It's just too complex, and yet, of course, they have to cling to that. Well, let's go to John calling us from Louisiana. John, do you have a question or comment?
Good evening, my good doc. It's good to hear you again. Isn't science all about grouping?
I beg your pardon?
isn't science all about groping?
How do you mean grouping?
Well, groping. They don't know where they're going when they start out, do they?
Well,
and they don't know where they're going to wind up, do they?
Well, I think that it depends on what science you're doing. I mean, certainly there are places for science, and some science is very good. But when you get into evolution, then you're in real trouble. Certainly, we can analyze many things, and scientists have made some amazing and remarkable discoveries. But usually what they're doing is discovering God's plan, and they try to take credit for it. What would your thoughts be, Dr. Martin?
Dr. Stan, I can't say that any better than you just did. I think that's exactly right.
Okay, anything else, John?
Doctor, many people have been concerned about your return, including myself, and I'm so happy to hear you back again. I hope you had a happy sojourn.
Well, I didn't have a happy sojourn. I was working. It was just that we were on a different network. What had happened, of course, is one of the transmitters had just quit working there, Angel 2 at WHRI, so they had us on a couple of different satellites, a couple of different towers, and that's why you couldn't get us. But I'm glad to be back, too. Thanks
God bless you. Glad to hear you again.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. If you're out there and you have a question, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, this is really, of course, the very crux of the issue. The reason that they will not allow creation to be taught in school because it's religious, that's just fraught with all sorts of really hypocrisy, because evolution is religious, too. Humanism is humanism is the religion of evolutionists, and humanism has been declared to be by the Supreme Court to be a religion. But you're allowed to teach one religion in school, but not the other. And of course, we're quite willing to have people be taught evolution if the creationists can come along and point out what's wrong with that. But you see, they're not allowed to. So our educational system really is a fraud, as far as I'm concerned. And, of course, until the American people understand that, and people who love their children get their kids out of the government schools, why, there is no hope for America. Don't you think that, really, this whole thing is the very crux of an effort to destroy the religious faith of our people?
Oh, yes, there's no doubt about that. And I think, there are several, Josh McDowell and several others have said that we're losing about 70% of our evangelical Christian young people by the end of 4 years of college. Because even back in the Sunday schools, we're not teaching our children how to defend the faith. We used to call them up at Summit Ministries where I worked many years, John 3:16 Christian weenies. Our kids come in there and they can't defend the faith. And so for instance, the pictures in the Sunday school literature, they'll have Noah's Ark and they'll have this little boat with a giraffe sticking out the top and the elephants can't quite get their whole rear in there. And then they go to college, and the professors say, well, there's no way Noah could get all those animals on that ark. And that image comes up of this little boat with a giraffe sticking out the top. And, something? I never thought of that. I'll bet you, well, my professor must be right. And then they just keep capitalizing on that. And we're losing, according to some major ministry people, we're losing about 70% of our Christian young people by 4 years of college.
And yet, of course, nobody points out that all primitive societies have something in their history of the flood.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And many of them have 8 people surviving the flood, the specific number that the Bible talks about.
Right, and these are people who haven't communicated with one another, but of course this has been passed on from generation to generation. Well, let's go to Roger. Hi, Roger. How are you doing?
Hi, gentlemen. Yeah, and just for that last guy and for anyone else, in the unfortunate event you lose that transmitter, look for you to get bumped up to 7.580 megahertz. And I wanted to go back to that earlier guy about space. And, you know, within the conventional secularist humanist understanding, space is not nothing. It's not even a pure vacuum. But beyond that, the theologians have it that the universe was created ex nihilo in the Latin, or out of nothing. So you could conceivably look at the universe as, say, a bubble beyond which there is truly nothing. But within that bubble, it's not nothing. Sorry about that, but God bless.
Okay, I don't know what. Thank you very much. I really think that this is one of these sophistic type of arguments. Then God is creating nothing. How could God create nothing? And then where do you go from there? And you get people so confused they really can't see what either you're even talking about. And, of course, the whole thrust of that argument is to get people away from the very real issues that we're discussing. Would you agree with that, Dr. Martin?
Oh, I sure do. And as a matter of fact, I think that last caller there made a good point. I think the only thing that is infinite is God himself, because everything else is created. Therefore, yes, there's a picket fence out there somewhere around the universe. Well, I say picket fence, but the universe is not infinite, even though we sure haven't found the edge of it yet, even with the Hubble telescope. But yes, our God is infinite, and everything else is finite, because it's all part of his creation. But praise God, he gives us the opportunity to become eternal through the Lord Jesus.
Amen to that. Well, and what about some of the other animals? Of course, you described in your book, and of course, these are examples of things that couldn't have happened by accident.
Well,
how about the beaver? He's a interesting little critter.
Yes, we just got back from Colorado, saw a bunch of beaver dams up there, and I'll tell you what, engineers have studied beaver dams to learn how to put strength into those dams and beaver houses. They build that house out in there, and they'll have at least two entrances and exits. And how do they know to do that? And then it's almost like it's air conditioned. They build that in a way that it keeps the rain out from coming down on top. They put mud and things up, but they have different little ventilators, I guess you'd call them, that they put in there that keeps the airflow going good, so that the little baby beavers will have a good air. And then the beaver has goggles. It has clear eyelids that when it's under the water, it pulls them down. It has nose flaps and ear flaps, and it even has flaps to cover up its molars and its throat, with fur-lined flaps and the way in the back of its mouth. I don't think the front teeth, being a dentist, I don't think the front teeth are sensitive. They just keep growing. That's the one they chew. They have to chew because it keeps growing, and if they don't chew and wear it off, they'll die because the front teeth will get too big. But they must have nerves in those back teeth, and God made them little fur-lined flaps to cover those up. They even have a special claw on their hind feet, on both hind feet. It's like a fork. It comes out and separates, and they use that to comb their hair. And they have an oil gland with a thick oil. They'll comb their hair and comb that oil in there so that they're basically waterproof and the cold water doesn't get into their skin. The beaver's just a miraculous. They can pull a branch against a current, and so you have the drag of the branch, you have a current flowing downstream, and they can swim right over to where they want to go. So they're making mathematical calculations and guiding themselves with their tail rudder. Absolutely amazing. They're just amazing. Well, but you know, that's Romans 1. God says if we carefully study what he has made, and he wants us to, then we will either honor him and give thanks or be reduced to vain imagination.
Well, of course, one of your discussions was on the gecko, this little lizard that can walk upside down on a ceiling.
Yes.
And, of course, how can you possibly do something like that?
Yes.
And, of course, why don't you explain why that's significant?
Well, now they've discovered there's different types of geckos that are not all using the same mechanism to stick to the ceiling or run across an upside down mirror. Some of them, apparently, the Tokay lizard uses van der Waals forces, which are molecular or atomic forces, and it controls them somehow. And that work was done just the last couple years, and I think I've referenced that work in my book. And then there's others that have like tiny little suction cups on these little tiny hairs that are on their feet. You have to magnify them about 30,000 times just to find these little things. But then they had to have a special foot. If you compare a gecko's foot to other types of lizards, it's a totally different foot. The design of the foot is totally different. And so they have to have their foot designed so they can use parts of their foot to hold on with while they pop up the other parts of their feet. If they had a normal lizard's foot, and they put their foot down with this powerful sticking mechanism, they'd probably never be able to lift their foot off whatever surface it was again. And those feet can compensate for different types of textures that the little lizard is running across. It's amazing. It's miraculous, really.
And of course, aren't there little hairs there on their feet? So are they, there are multiple little hairs, and that's how they're able to cling to the ceiling?
Yes, well, they're like little tufts of hairs, and you can't even see those hairs. You have to magnify those almost 2,000 times just to find them. And then with the hairs, apparently comes either this Van der Waals forces attraction type thing or the suction cup type thing.
All right, well, it's all perfectly designed, and of course somebody had to create the whole thing. And of course the people on the other side who disbelieve in God will scoff at it, and this is what we anticipate. And so we simply have to point out that they don't have an explanation. All they can do is come up and try to confuse the issue because they don't want to accept the simple thing and the truth that God created the heaven and the earth. Our guest has been Dr. Job Martin. Once again, get your telephone number out, Dr. Martin, if people would like your book.
Well, our telephone number is 972-771-0568.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much. The book, The Evolution of a Creationist, it's always a pleasure to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, fine.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention one of the things that you can really do if you are concerned about what's going on in the United States today is to establish an institute on the Constitution in your church, in your home, in your neighborhood. And let me tell you what it is. It's actually 12 half-hour lectures by Dr. John Eismo going into the structure of our Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and certainly the Federalist Papers. And, of course, it goes into the Christian history of America. Now, this is one of the most carefully kept secrets in America because they don't want you to know that our founding fathers established a Christian nation. They were Christians, and, of course, they used Christian principles. Our law was based in Christianity, but, of course, this is never mentioned today. Well, if you'd like to learn more, give them a call at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. If you don't get involved, who will? And if not now, when? And then, of course, I want to mention that if you have children in a government school, why you really need to get them out. And one of the best ways to homeschool is with a Robinson homeschool curriculum. And this, of course, is a complete curriculum from grammar school all the way through high school graduation, where you'll get an outstanding Christian-based education. And, of course, it's on 22 CDs. The tests are there. The lesson plans are there. The answers to the tests are there. The textbooks are there, except for the Saxon textbooks of the Robinson Homeschool curriculum. Over 50,000 of them out across America. They're available for $199.95. If you'd like more information or you'd like to purchase one, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Designed by my good friend, Dr. Art Robinson, there is nothing as good in America today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking here at Radio Liberty. We'd like to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do. And then, of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, perhaps the March newsletter, which will tell you the true story of why we went into Iraq, having nothing to do with what you were told. The plans were made back in 1998 and for 1997. It's all there. We quote from their documents. The Project for the New American Century. If you'd like a free copy of the March newsletter or the April newsletter deals with the AIDS or the May newsletter deals with the SARS epidemic, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. The last newsletter takes you into genetic engineering and why you should really be concerned, why the European nations have outlawed genetic products. And, of course, we're going ahead and pushing them here. Either everybody in Europe is wrong, or, of course, our administration is not telling us the truth, one or the other. You're going to have to decide. I think our latest newsletter, and that would be the May newsletter, will give you many answers to things you will never hear from Barbara Walters or Jen, or Dan, rather. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, of course, we hope that you'll want to subscribe and get it on a regular basis, so that you'll get the information you're not going to get through regular channels. Now, we want to simply mention that if you're out there across America, you have children or grandchildren in government schools, you need to get a Phonopoly set. Most programs to teach children how to read phonetically and spell phonetically are $300, $400, $500, $600. This is $139.95, and we throw in a couple of books. It's 5 board games and 2 bonus games. We hope that many of you, of course, will want to consider getting ready reserve food, so you'll have the various food and supplies on hand if there is a major catastrophe here. And if you'd like to get a free catalog, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you're concerned about the high cost of health insurance and would like a Christian alternative, a Christian sharing alternative that will pay your hospital and your personal bills, it is not an insurance policy, but give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask about MediShare. And then, of course, you go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And, of course, you can see the pictures of the various Big Berkey and Berkey Light water filters. Of course, and you can certainly pull down any of my newsletters. You can pull down any of our radio programs there, and you can listen to them, or you can pull down any of the things that are, and the articles that are written there on the population control agenda and other items. That's radioliberty.com. So we hope you'll go get the information and then help us to get the truth out across America. The information you're not going to get through regular channels here in the United States today. So we are having very, very real problems. Right now, everything's looking pretty good. The market's going up. And, of course, it may very well go up for a period of time. But, of course, eventually we're going to be in real trouble because we've shipped our major industries and so many of our jobs overseas. And eventually, of course, this whole fiat money system is going to be in real problems. And, of course, begin making preparations for that right now. So we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers because they should be, of course, leading this truly spiritual battle in which we're engaged. We ask you, of course, to pray for revival in America because if the American people don't turn back to God, this nation will never again be the apple of his eye as it once was. And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.